You can turn with me for a message this evening to Exodus chapter 3. The title of my message this evening is A Fire in the Wilderness. Imagine a man who was once a prince, a man who once walked floors of polished marble and spoke with the authority of the empire. Imagine that same man now standing in the middle of a dusty desert. It had been 40 years. 40 years of silence. Moses wasn't a young man with a vision anymore. He was an 80-year-old shepherd with calloused feet and sunburnt skin. He had spent the last 14,000 plus days doing the exact same thing, waking up before the sun, leading the stubborn sheep out to the thin patches of grass, listening to the nothingness of the wilderness, the sound of his own breathing, the occasional bleat of the sheep. This is the context of the passage that we're going to look at this evening in Exodus chapter 3. The prince of Egypt, as he once was, has been swallowed up by the ordinariness of daily life. He's a fugitive. He's a nobody. He might even be thinking that his life is a waste, that he's missed his big chance, that his only legacy is going to be the dust that he leaves after he dies. But in the meantime, he's faithfully keeping the sheep. He's doing what's at hand. He's looking for the presence of God in ordinary everyday things. And right there in the desert, in the middle of a Tuesday that was like any other Tuesday, if you will, something happens. And it's not a lightning bolt that comes down from God. It's just a common, scraggly, everyday bush that suddenly bursts into flames and then won't stop burning. And that's what we see here in Exodus chapter 3. We'll start reading at verse 1. Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the backside of the desert, and he came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. Now, note, I'm sure you're aware of this, but Moses wrote the book of Exodus after the events of Exodus, and so he calls this the mountain of God, because the burning bush here and because the giving of the Ten Commandments later, as far as I know, there was no reference to this being any sort of a special mountain before this time. It was much like every other mountain, as far as I know. In verse 2, and the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of the bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. Now, I don't know if there were times that bushes in the wilderness did catch fire, if occasionally he would see maybe something burning, not really sure how it started, if there may be an errant campfire or maybe some sort of reflection. I don't know, but the unusual thing about this bush was that it was burning, but it wasn't burning up. It seemed as if it was unaffected by the fire. Now, verse 4, and when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, here am I. And he said, draw not nigh hither, but put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. And that's our first point this evening. We are standing on holy ground. Whether we recognize it or whether we don't recognize it, we are standing on holy ground. Moses was just grazing the sheep like he always grazed sheep. He was wandering in the wilderness that was much like any other wilderness. Came to a mountain that was probably a lot like any other mountain. But then he recognized something. God was there. And so we can tell that it's not unique circumstances, it's not elaborate churches that create holiness or that invite the presence of God. What creates holiness is the presence of God. And so many times we as Christians fail to grasp this fact. We find ourselves waiting for a special call to the mission field or waiting to finish our pursuit of a degree, or waiting for a special series of meetings to just come and do something that's never been done before. But we need to recognize that the place where we're standing is holy ground. And it doesn't matter if it's the living room, or if it's the shop floor, or if it's the barn, or if it's the cab of the truck, or if it's a little chapel on Church Street. Holy ground, because God is there. Now, some of you may be familiar with the book, The Practicing the Presence of God by Brother Lawrence. I remember reading excerpts from that years ago and being impressed by what he had to say. But Brother Lawrence was a French monk who was a cook in the monastery. He wasn't a preacher. He wasn't a singer. He just spent his days in the hot, smoky kitchen, scrubbing greasy pots and peeling potatoes, whatever. He was a cook. But Brother Lawrence refused to believe that his work was less than the work of the monks who were praying in the chapel or the monks who were singing in the choir. And he said, "The time of business does not with me differ from the time of prayer. And in the noise and clatter of my kitchen, I possess God in as great tranquility as if I were upon my knees." And so his habit was to recognize the presence of God wherever he was and whatever he was called to do, and to converse with God as he went throughout the day to receive God's guidance and instruction. And he became so known for living in the presence of God and his lowly calling that people began to notice. And theologians and leaders would travel just so they could sit down in his kitchen, not because they were hungry, not because they needed a meal, but because they wanted to be near to a man who had turned peeling vegetables into an act of worship, and they wanted to understand how it worked. He didn't find God despite the kitchen work. He found God in the kitchen work. And the same can be true for us. So whether it's our normal round of daily duties or our normal weekly church services or whatever the calling is, God is there. The only difference is whether or not we recognize the fact that he's there. Too often we end up being like Jacob. We have that verse in Genesis chapter 28 and verse 16 where it says, "And Jacob awaked out of his sleep and he said, 'Surely the Lord is in this place and I knew it not.'" God revealed to him in a special place, in a special way, his presence there. But it wasn't because God wasn't with Jacob before that. He just wanted Jacob to be aware of the fact that he was with him. Why would we want to go through life blind to the presence of God? Why shouldn't we converse with our Heavenly Father as we go throughout the day? Why wouldn't we ask him, "Lord, what do you have for me to do today? Lord, thank you for helping me deliver that load safely. Lord, I'm feeling a little overwhelmed right now. Please help me find peace. Lord, is this a good opportunity for sharing my testimony?" These are the sorts of prayers and questions that we can bring to God. And God is there, and he can direct us, and he can give us his wisdom, because the place we are standing is holy ground. Now, verse 6. "Moreover, he said, 'I am the God of thy father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob.' And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And the Lord said, 'I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and I have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows.'" And we get a little insight into God in these verses. My second point this evening is, God is already at work. So many times we get bored or disillusioned just waiting for God to do something. "God, any time now. God, I'm waiting. God, when are you going to do something? Why don't you do something?" But God is already at work. Silence was not absence in this account. God had been working on this project for 40 years or more. He had heard every prayer. He had counted every tear. He was actively preparing a deliverer, even if No one recognized it. This rescue mission was already underway. Even while Moses thought he was trapped in a dead-end street of shepherding sheep, God was preparing him to lead his people to the promised land. God is already at work. When the Pharisees challenged Jesus about working on the Sabbath day, I'm fascinated with how he responded in John chapter 5 and verse 17. This is what he said. But Jesus answered them, "My Father worketh hitherto, and I work." Now that wording is a little obscure. It could be translated this way: "My Father never stops working, and so I keep working too." We may think that God has given up on our particular needs, or that we need to go somewhere else to see the work of God revealed. But those things are not true. God never stops working. He's working right now. If we can't see it, we need to ask him to open our eyes to his work. Instead of asking God to please start working, we need to thank him that he is already working and ask him to help us see the work that he's doing. But we notice something else encouraging here in verse 6. While God is at work and while he's unfolding his plan, he also is specifically interested in a relationship with his people. It's interesting that as God starts this conversation with Moses, he doesn't say, "Moses, I have a job for you to do." He doesn't say, "Moses, here's your task list." No, he says, "Moses, I am the God who was with your fathers." God starts with an introduction, prioritizing connection over commission. He doesn't want Moses primarily for work. He wants to work with him. And so our third point this evening is God wants to work in relationship with us. And that's hard for us to grasp, because why would God want to do that? But it's also amazing because God wants to do that. And we wrestle with this thing. And sometimes we say, if I were in charge and we could do it my way, I'd be fine with it. Or I'm fine with God being in charge and he can do it his way as long as I'm not involved. But those are not the options. The glory and beauty of this is that God himself wants to be in relationship with us to complete his work. He wants to hold our hand in his. He wants to help us to carry out a work that is beyond what we could ever do on our own, or really even ever imagine. And every sunrise and every sunset is a reminder to us that God is faithful and he's there and he wants us to know it. And every breath is a reminder of God's personal care and provision for us, reminder we can't operate on our own. And every task that we accomplish, no matter how strong we were thinking we were in accomplishing it, is a testament to the strength that God provides. And Jesus said those encouraging words in Matthew 28 and verse 20, "Lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the world." That's the amazing truth. God wants to work in relationship with us. That family member we don't really know how to help, that neighbor we don't really know how to talk to, that bill we really don't know how to pay, God is at work and he wants to work with us. I was reading once about a couple. Both of them were very successful in careers, as I recall. But as they were evaluating their lives and as they were learning to seek God and as they were reading the Bible, somewhere in there they were invited to the mission field. And they prayed about it and they considered it, and finally both of them were convinced that God wanted them to give up everything that they were doing and go to the mission field. And so they sold their house and they liquidated their assets. And they got everything together and they paid off their debts. And they went to this town where they were supposed to take language training before they went overseas. And the way everything ended up, by the time they paid their tuition for the training and they got their house to rent and they had everything, the move taken care of, they didn't have any money left. And so they were kind of sitting there and they were saying, well, we got this far, but now we're out of money. And how are we supposed to buy groceries if we don't have any money? And they talked about it and they prayed about it and they finally decided, well, there's not much we can do about it. But God, we're confident God has called us to this place. And so we're confident he can do something if something needs to be done. Well, I woke up the next morning and the husband came and opened up the front door. And here was a newspaper lying on the front step. And of course they didn't subscribe to a newspaper. They had no reason to get a newspaper. But there was a newspaper. And so he thought, oh, we got a newspaper. So he picks it up and he takes it inside. And he starts to open the pages of the newspaper. And he suddenly realizes that between every page of the newspaper, cash is stuffed into that newspaper. And it was the money they needed for groceries. It was the money they needed for their immediate expenses. And that was not the only thing that happened. But fascinatingly, shortly before they ended up going overseas to the mission field, any sort of provision of donations of money or anything just stopped. Just absolutely stopped. And they said, God, what are you doing? What are you doing? You had been providing for us so well. We were almost getting used to it. And now there's nothing. Well, as he's writing about it, he reflects back and he said, that was actually the best thing that could have happened to us. Because when we got to the mission field, we found out that the whole system was so corrupt that anyone trying to send money or provide donations or support never would have made it to us. And so we just had to learn to operate in a different way. Anyway, fascinating story. But God is interested in working with us. He wants to work in relationship with us. And that can't happen if we can do it all on our own, right? He delights in doing things with us that we could not do. Let's continue reading here. Verse 8, the Lord is speaking and he says, and I am come down. Note God's personal interest. I am come down. I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land unto a good land and a large, unto a land flowing with milk and honey, unto the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel is come unto me, and I have also seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppress them. Come now, therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. So you see what God says. God says, I have a plan. I have a purpose. And it's a wonderful plan. It's a plan beyond what you ever imagined. You know, Moses' plan was, if we could just stop some of this slavery, if we could kind of settle that down, we'd be good. God says, I've got a better plan than that. I want to take these people to the promised land. And he says to Moses, I'm inviting you. I'm inviting you to join me in carrying this out. And that's our next point, point number 4. God invites us to join him. Moses wasn't forced to join God's plan. He actually had a choice in this matter, and God approaches him as if he did have a choice. He offers him a choice. And Moses was not sidelined while God did whatever he was going to do. God invited Moses to cooperate with him in the plan that he was unfolding. And he seems to be saying here, Moses, I know this has been on your heart. Moses couldn't possibly have forgotten his people back there in Egypt. I know that you care about these people. I know that you care about what's been going on, and I have a plan. Now join me in this plan. I have a very important role for you to play. And it's shocking, really, that God cares that much about people. He comes down. He reveals himself to Moses. He opens Moses' eyes to the beauty of his plan. He invites Moses to join him in the plan. Well, this isn't exclusive to Moses. It's the same for us. As we become aware of God's presence in our lives and God opens our eyes to see him at work in the world around us, at some point we will receive that invitation to work together with him, wherever and however that is. And it could be small things. It could be that sick child in the middle of your busy baking day is God's invitation for you to join him in showing care and compassion. It might be that talkative neighbor when you're on a tight deadline. That might be God's invitation. It might even be a flat tire in the woods somewhere. It might be an opportunity to answer a question at Walmart. It might be an opportunity to start a children's ministry. It might be a call to move to a foreign mission field. However it is, God invites us to join him in his work. Often this invitation is unexpected, but it's always a wonderful opportunity to cooperate with God. And we see what happens next in verse 11. And Moses said unto God, "Who am I?" Now just notice for future reference the use of the personal pronoun there. Who am I? That I should go unto Pharaoh, and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt. And he, this is reference to God, said, "Certainly I will be with thee, and this shall be a token unto thee that I have sent thee. When thou hast brought forth the people out of Egypt, ye shall serve God upon this mountain." So notice how Moses responds to this invitation to join God. He looks at himself and he looks at his own resources and he says, "I can't do that. I can't do that." He feels unqualified. He feels overwhelmed. He just can't see it working out. And so our next point is, point five, we struggle to believe. So often when God gives us a wonderful invitation to work together with him and do something in his kingdom, we struggle to believe. Moses says, "God, I'm not qualified for this." And we say, "Really, God, you want me to do this? You think I have the resources for this? I don't see how that could work out. I mean, I kind of like the idea, but I have other responsibilities I'm tied up with. I don't have the talent. I don't have the experience. Maybe somebody else would be more qualified or have more availability than I do." That's how we tend to respond. We struggle to believe. We so long in one sense to be used by God, but when God gives us the opportunity to be used in his kingdom, suddenly we're not sure anymore. "God, that's not really what I had in mind." And I remember when I was much younger, sort of looking up with some respect toward the ordained men in the congregation and thinking, "Wouldn't that be wonderful to be a minister sometime?" And then I was in the lot for the minister, and I thought, I don't think I can do this. But that's how we are. And I think part of the problem is, the reason we struggle so much with belief is that we completely misunderstand the invitation. God is not giving us a responsibility. God is inviting us to join him. It really isn't about what we're capable of. It really isn't about whether we're able to pull off this whole plan on our own. We never could, because it's a God-sized plan. And notice how God responds to Moses' doubts. He does not say, "Moses, I know you're capable. I know you're completely able to lead an entire nation out of Egypt single-handedly." He doesn't say that. He says in verse 12, "Certainly I will be with thee." Moses was looking at his own resources, and God never intended it to be carried out on Moses' resources. God says, "I'm going to be the one that makes this happen." And he continues to explain at length. If you read the rest of chapter 3, it's mostly God just going on and on and saying, "I will work this out, and this is what will happen, and I will make sure this happens, and then I will do that." God is so very gracious and patient with us. But the call remains. What will we do with it? We'll jump down to chapter 4 and verse 1. "And Moses answered and said, 'But behold, they will not believe me, nor hearken unto my voice, for they will say, The Lord hath not appeared unto thee.' And the Lord said unto him, 'What is that in thine hand?' And he said, 'A rod.'" So our sixth point this evening is, we must start with what we have. God says, "Moses, you have so many questions. You're not sure how the whole future will work out. You don't know how every detail is going to happen. I have those things under control. Let's start with what you do have. Why don't you take that rod that you're holding in your hand, and why don't you throw that on the ground, and we'll see what happens." And of course, that's what happens. Verse 3, and he said, cast it on the ground, and he cast it on the ground, and it became a serpent. And Moses fled from before it. And the Lord said unto Moses, put forth thine hand and take it by the tail. And he put forth his hand and caught it, and it became a rod in his hand. What a miracle. And the miracle was all God. But what was required was for Moses to take that step and use what he had in his hand. God didn't ask Moses to do anything hard. He didn't say, Moses, I would like you to take a tree branch and change it into a snake. He didn't say that. He only asked him to use what he had. And God does not ask us to do the impossible. So often when God asks us to do things, we think, oh, that's impossible. But God's simply asking us to do something we can actually do. He simply asks us to take the next step, and he'll take care of the rest. We don't need new talents. We don't need new resources. We simply need to surrender what God has already given us to God. It might be your ability to bake. It might be your knack for numbers. It might be your love for conversation. It might be an undeveloped talent that you don't even think you have. God will use it to his glory and to the building of his kingdom. So we must ask ourselves, what is in my hand? Is it as a wrench? Is it a steering wheel? Is it a keyboard or a textbook? Give it to God. See what God will do with it. He's well able. Kind of reminds me of that wonderful account in the New Testament where the little boy came to Jesus and offered him some food. And in John chapter 6 and verse 9, it says, there is a lad here which hath 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes, but what are they among so many? We can ask ourselves the question, would I offer my lunch to Jesus? We'd say, well, certainly. I mean, looking back, but at the time, would you have done it? Not knowing what was going to happen? I'm guessing it wasn't the easiest thing to do. Are we offering our lunch to Jesus today? And note what happened. Jesus didn't say, well, thank you for that food. Now please cut it in 5,000 pieces and hand it out. That's not what happened. The boy offered his lunch, giving up something that was very important to him, and God used it to his glory. With that one small sacrifice, this boy became part of something that was just amazing. We're still talking about it 2,000 years later. How many of the world's billionaires would give their fortune to be talked about 2,000 years later? And yet this young boy simply gave what was in his hands. Let's jump down to verse 18 of chapter 4. The discourse with God is concluded. Moses agrees to go here in verse 18, and Moses went and returned to Jethro, his father-in-law, and said unto him, let me go, I pray thee, and return unto my brethren which are in Egypt, and see whether they be yet alive. And Jethro said to Moses, go in peace. And the Lord said unto Moses in Midian, go, return into Egypt, for all the men are dead which sought thy life. And Moses took his wife and his sons and set them upon an ass, and he returned to the land of Egypt. And Moses took the rod of God in his hand. You see what happened here? Moses agreed. Moses made that decision. And then there were next steps that he needed to take. And that's my 7th point. God calls us to adjust to his plan. Now, this verse makes it sound very short and very easy and very simple, but I'm sure it was not short or easy or simple. Can you just imagine Moses coming into Zipporah and saying, well, dear, I was out in the wilderness today, and I was talking to a bush, and here was God telling me to go back to Egypt. I know I was almost killed there before we were married, but this time I know it's going to be all right because God said he's going with us, and I'm going to free the whole nation of Israel. How would that conversation go? You think she would say, Moses, you've been out in the desert too long. You're going crazy. There's no way you're going back to Egypt. And even if you insist on putting your own life in danger, we're not going to drag our children into this. But what happened? Well, obviously what happened was they came to the conclusion that it was the right and good thing to follow the invitation and direction of God. I assume they prayed about it. They agreed that it was God calling, and they decided that no matter how crazy it was from a human viewpoint, that it made perfect sense since it was God's call. And Moses quit his job that he'd held for 40 years, and he gave up the only income he had for his family, and he and his wife packed up everything they had, and they headed straight into the fearsome jaws of Pharaoh, because that's what God asked of them. And that's challenging, isn't it? But why should it surprise us that God shows up in our lives and asks us to do things that don't fit with our plans? It shouldn't surprise us. We remember those verses from Isaiah 55 where God says, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. For as the rain cometh down, and the snow from heaven, and returneth not thither, but watereth the earth, and maketh it bring forth and bud, that it may give seed to the sower, and bread to the eater, so shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth. It shall not return unto me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it shall prosper in the thing whereto I sent it." It's no wonder that our narrow, finite plans clash with God's all-wise and infinite plans. But the same God who sends the rain down to water the earth and makes the plants grow out of that, the same sovereign power can work in and through us and bring forth results to his glory and the furtherance of his kingdom. And we have the opportunity to be part of that. Now, we don't have time to work our way through the entire story, but we're going to skip over to Exodus 14. You know the story. Just want to wrap up with these verses. Exodus 14, 26, "And the Lord said unto Moses," this is at the Red Sea, "Stretch out thine hand over the sea, that the waters may come again upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots, and upon their horsemen. And Moses stretched forth his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to his strength when the morning appeared. And the Egyptians fled against it, and the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea, and the waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen and all the host of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. There remained not so much as one of them. But the children of Israel walked upon dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the seashore, and Israel saw that great work which the Lord did upon the Egyptians, and the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. Then sang Moses and the children of Israel this song unto the Lord and spake, saying, I will sing unto the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea. The Lord is my strength and song, and he has become my salvation. He is my God, and I will prepare him an habitation, my father's God, and I will exalt him." And so the question is, if it's still in our mind, can God deliver on his promises? Will God deliver on his promises? Yes, he will. He more than delivered. He didn't only free the Israelite slaves, he destroyed the most powerful empire on earth. And he primarily used Moses to do it. Only God can do that. What a spectacular fulfillment of God's promise. What a wonderful result of accepting God's gracious invitation. And the eighth point is, when we obey God, we experience more than we ask or think. As Moses obeyed, as he stood before Pharaoh, he didn't just hear about God's power, he saw God's power firsthand. He saw the plagues, he saw the parting of the Red Sea, he saw and tasted the manna and the quail, and experienced the shoes that never wore out. He personally experienced God as the great deliverer. And we too can be part of God's wonderful work in the world. All that is required is that we are willing to see God, enter into a relationship with him, be willing to accept his invitation, to believe his promises, to adjust to fit his plan instead of our plans. I'm reminded of a small, hunched over woman who spent most of her life in the dirty streets of Calcutta. And you've all heard of Mother Teresa. But when people would marvel at the hospitals that she built or the lives that she saved, she would just say this, "I'm a little pencil in the hand of God who is sending a love letter to the world." In some sense, she understood a little bit of what Moses learned at the bush. A pencil's just a very common tool. And on its own, it can't do anything. But when that pencil is picked up by a master author, it can write stories that change history. Moses brought a stick. Brother Lawrence brought his vegetable peeler. Mother Teresa had the pencil. Whatever tools God has given us in our lives, those are tools that he can use to his glory. Don't let the ordinariness of your life trick you into thinking that God is not there. God is not looking for a golden scepter. All he's looking for is a surrendered heart that is willing to follow where he leads. I'm reminded of those familiar verses in Ephesians chapter 3, verses 20 and 21, where Paul writes, "Now unto him that is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that worketh in us, unto him be glory in the church by Jesus Christ throughout all ages, world without end. Amen." God is able, and he's calling us. Maybe we don't see it yet. Maybe we need to pray for him to reveal his program in our lives. But he's calling us. The question is, how will we respond? I'm not going to give a formal invitation tonight. I do appreciate your attention and participation in the service this evening. Pray that the Lord would bless you as you go from this place and prepare us again for services tomorrow. Let's stand together for closing prayer.